So we're talking about what Concord Public Works was like when I got here in May of 1997. I was hired by Chris Wayland to make Concord Public Works the best it could be. And by that was to take the talent within the organization and put it in sync with community values, change people if they needed to be changed to strengthen the organization, bring in new talent if we needed that. What I found was an organization that was sprinkled with very good people, very professional people, people that cared for Concord. What it appeared to be that didn't have the quality of leadership, and that was it seemed to me the biggest gap, not the quality of the people here in Concord Public Works. And over the last 9 years, we've worked together to try to achieve Chris's goal.
I think you mentioned to me in conversation that there usually is not a natural constituency for public work, so you need the good leadership and advocacy, and he provided that.
Yes, that's true. Schools have parents, libraries have all sorts of passionate readers. Everybody's interested in to be safe, whether it's from fire or from criminal activity. Public works is a little different. Everybody in town and the region that enters the community depends on those services, whether it's water, sewer, roads, parks, playgrounds, or even there's their final resting place. But there isn't a natural constituency, so the role of Concord Public Works leadership is to provide that advocacy so people can understand why it makes a difference to contribute their hard-earned monies and resources in the town budget, to be willing to pay for rate increases if there are water or sewer customers, and get them excited about what we can do together. And Concord is special in that way, that it's a community that has high values, that expects very high standards from its public employees. That's a natural fit for us to work to try to achieve that together. And we've done that in a lot of ways, with recycling, with Ann Dorfman teaming up with Reuse It, and other recycling advocates. Our water conservation program now with Joanne Bassetta teaming up with everybody that doesn't want to waste that precious resource. The people interested in protecting the environment, our roads and right-of-ways crisscross Concord's green space, their wetlands, their rivers. We need to take good care of those resources. We need to be in sync and work with those environmental advocates. And finally, everybody wants a good return on their investment. So we're working with, whether it's Tony Lagabo at the finance office or the finance committee or the Public Works Commission, and our own professional staff to make sure that what we've got is well planned and well organized, it's well designed, and then the implementation is cost effectively completed.
How large is the department?
Right now it has 52 people, men and women. Its annual operating budget is around $8 million. We've got far more, almost $20 million going this year in capital improvements throughout town. The organization is broken up into two staff divisions, the administrative and then the engineering division, and then two line divisions that provide the direct services, and that's the highway, park, and cemetery division, and also the water and sewer division. We're supported by very good equipment. We've got very good supervisory leadership, so the crews know what they need to do, where they need to go, and they take a great deal of pride in getting that job done as well. So it's 52 very talented people, well served, well led, I think, with tremendous support from the community.
how does the enterprise system work?
Enterprise funds, it's an accounting term. It basically means, in a nutshell, that they're run like a business, that the entire cost of service is generated by user fees, that all the costs, direct or indirect, capital or operating, have to be paid from those user fees. In other words, there's a bottom line. We need to have a positive bottom line. At the same time, be sensitive to our ratepayers' needs and willingness and ability to pay. So we have in Concord for quite some time before I got here two enterprise funds within Concord Public Works, the water fund and the sewer fund. We also have a special fund, which is the solid waste fund, which is not technically an enterprise fund. And our cemetery fund is a mix of user fees and general fund monies. The key with the enterprise funds is that if you don't spend the monies you raise, it stays within the enterprise. It can be therefore used as building financial building blocks for capital programs that might take 3, 4, 5, up to 10 years. They're fully audited, and the audit report goes to the town treasurer, the selectman, and town manager. One of the things we've been able to do is develop 10-year financial plans for each of our special funds, solid waste, water, wastewater, and even a 5-year plan for a cemetery. So we know what we need to do relative to revenue and where that money's going to go at what sequencing, what year, whether we're going to need to borrow the money or pay for it out of working capital. And then we can measure the results of that plan every single year.
The very name of the department, you felt there is something in calling it Concord Public Works.
Yes, people get tired of me mentioning that, but it, from my experience, and I've been in public works now for over 30 years, over 25 years, public works, too frequently, the DPWs, Department of Public Works, aren't doing their job well. People don't have a high regard for them. They don't reflect the values, the talents, the standards of the community they serve. Concord is special. I wanted to make sure that Concord Public Works was up to the task. So one of the first things I did was, yes, to change from the D to the C, and yes, we refer ourselves to ourselves as Concord Public Works CPW. We have caps that, that we give to our employees and our public works commissioners, and they wear them with pride.
That's great. Let's begin with the water department and the demand for expanded water capacity.
Yeah, when I got here in 1997, this spring, we were going into a warm and dry summer, and the town's water resources, there was a real question whether or not our groundwater wells and our one surface water supply at Nagog Pond could meet the summertime demand. So we did a couple things. One is that we put together a water conservation program and spread the word very rapidly. Actually, the whole department went door-to-door with doorknob hangers asking people to conserve water and why. The thrust has always been to reduce outdoor irrigation that in many cases is overwatered or unnecessary. And then secondly, develop a supply program to make sure that Concord had enough water for the future. Water conservation is our most economical source of supply, so where we can get it through conservation, we don't have to put a dollar into the ground or to a new well or a new pumping station. So we actually went through 1997 and through conservation, primarily through conservation, did not need to have a water ban, and one of our goals at Concord Public Works the Water and Sewer Division is never to have a water ban. And at least for the 9 years I've been privileged to be here, we have not had a water ban. That water conservation program has expanded. It's now comprehensive. It's broad. We have our own water conservation coordinator. It's ably led by Alan Cathcart, our water and sewer superintendent, and his staff. And the not only is Concord using less water overall, even though our customer base has increased, but the per capita use has gone down from over 80 gallons per day per person to, I believe it's 74 gallons per capita per day. And our goal is to get it down even lower. The second part, what conservation couldn't give us, was our water supply plan and strategy. And we had two plans that were on the shelf that were bogged down with permitting. And first was the Robinson Well, which had been land on Sudbury Road that had been purchased back in the 1970s for water development. Since the 1980s, they've been trying to get it permitted and designed, and it was basically sitting there. And Alan Cathcart, we had a real good consulting team with Weston Sampson. We fast-tracked that permitting process. It was arduous. There just seemed to be enormous, both federal and state issues that we had to overcome. Long and short of it, in the summer of 1999, we put a 0.8 million gallon a day well online. That increased our capacity by over 20%. And anybody that wants to walk through the woods behind off Sudbury Road, you'll see a very good looking, it looks like a Vermont cabin with a standing seam roof, and it fits right into the environment. That's providing very, very high quality water. The second supply that wasn't going any place was the Hugh Cargo well. That was developed in the 60s. The state regulations to protect the groundwater around it changed, and because there is nearby housing, the well, shortly after it was developed, was could no longer provide ongoing water supply. And so it was only going to be used for emergency purposes as declared by the state. So the question was, how could we use that source of supply, which was just pure, clean, probably that top quality water you'll find, without going through the whole permitting process? And Alan Cathcart and his team, we worked together and developed what we called a distributed well process, where instead of having one well, we had 10 smaller wells that were circled outside the protected radius. With that design, we got the DEP's approval, and without having to go through a whole re-permitting process that would have taken from 3 to 5 years, we were able to put that online in 2001. That added a half million gallons a day. So those two achievements, plus active, serious, and real conservation, has helped Concord have enough water, quality water, through the years, as well as not having any bans, restrictions, or that many, many, many communities have to have.
Now, where are both wells located that you've been talking about?
The Robinson Well is approximately a half mile down Sudbury Road on the left off Route 2. It was actually next to land that, and I'll have to check on this, that there was a developer that was planning to build, I can't remember, DeNormandy, the DeNormandy project, and that was stopped, and the town had the foresight to obtain some of that land for the water supply. The Hugh Cargo well is on Walden Street, just south of Thoreau and Walden intersection. It's a small brick structure. The renovation we did was actually extend and double the size in the back.
Recycling issue with solid waste has grown.
Yes. I was fortunate to have a wonderful mentor in Wellesley, where I was programs manager and then assistant public works director. His name is Pat Burdan, and he and we helped develop probably the finest drop-off recycling facility in the country. And he did most of the leadership there, but I was at his side trying to learn as much as I could. His breakthrough concept was that it shouldn't have to be the friends of recycling or the reuse-its to force the community to see the importance of recycling. Recycling should be the core, the capstone strategy of proper solid waste management. So when I got here in Concord, one of the first things I did was to find the best recycling expert in the Commonwealth, and I was fortunate to be able to hire Ann Dorfman. And Ann and Concord's had a wonderful history of recycling through Reuse It, Marion Thornton, Barbara Mudd, Vivian Walworth, Joan Kaufman, and I'm leaving out just dozens and dozens of primarily women that saw the light, I think, way before the DPW did here. And so it was a simple concept of teaming up with the advocates and then having a professionally run recycling program. So Ann and I helped a smidgen, negotiated a contract that was unique in a couple ways. First, in Concord, where recycling was pay-as-you-throw, which is a tremendous strategic means of increasing recycling, we went from bi-weekly recycling to weekly recycling. And that increased the recycling participation from approximately 34% to over 46% of the waste stream is now recycled, excluding composting. And then second, we negotiated so that the community would get the value of the paper sold through recycling by the solid waste hauling company that we hired. So over the years, by that contract proviso, we've gained hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue, and one of Ann's creation was to return those earnings back to our customers. So the customers have gotten a recycling rebate at least for the last 5 years. It's totaled over $250,000, and even without the rebate, our rates are lower than the private competition, and we actually have broader recycling services. Ann's also, with the help of Reuse It, developed the drop-off days where you have swap-off and drop-off from bulky waste to reusable items to sneakers that go into Nike Grind to crayons that are reformed, bicycles that go to Bikes Not Bombs and goes to Central America to be reused again. Building materials get reused or refabricated. Blankets and towels go to veterinary shelters to help our best friends and our dogs and our cats. Ann's also expanded recycling opportunities for the business and businesses so they can get rid of their fluorescent bulbs and their computers. She's advanced recycling, so now if you walk down the street, you can recycle your container, or if you're at a sport event, you can recycle your container, or you're at a special Walk Boston or something event here, you can also recycle. And her philosophy, and I think it's just so sound, that everybody should have the opportunity to recycle. One of the areas that we still are working with is to achieve as much as we can with recycling at the schools. Ann's been a technical support person. We have achieved, we think, some remarkable things. There's still a gap there, we think, that can be advanced in the future.
Tell me about the landfill, since it's been closed.
Yeah, when I got here in 97 and I had checked out the job, and I thought I knew everything I was getting into, one thing I wasn't aware of, that was that Concord's landfill, and this is a 35-acre site on the corner of Route 2 and Route 126, or Walden Street, just up a ways from Walden Pond, while it no longer was an active landfill, that had been closed, I believe, in 1994, after a town study committee, volunteer study committee, and that was the study committee that felt that the better way, instead of burying the trash, was to have curbside pickup with the strong recycling component. It had not been officially closed and capped. And so one of my challenges, or the challenges of the engineering group, was to get that accomplished. We actually did that, I believe, in 2001. Some interesting stories along the way, the big dig was being built. And we worked very hard to see whether or not we could get some of the excavate from the big dig, bring it over here, have free cover, actually develop some ball fields for a mixed use of passive recreation, active recreation, and also a composting site. That fell through, but that would have saved the town. We had estimated over $1 million.
Why did it fall through?
That's a good question. Nobody knows for sure, but the big dig officials lost interest in it. It's not clear to me whether or not there were outside political forces that did not want to see that happen. And the landfill's interesting because there's not a clear shared vision for the future of the landfill. While we were, or after we closed the landfill in 2001, in fact, the selectmen appointed a study committee to look at the future of the landfill, and we can talk about that for a minute. The other interesting thing, though, was how to design a closed landfill that didn't look like a closed landfill. In many, many places, if you go drive through the state and you look up, you'll see what I call the deflated football look of of weeds, no trees, and all very smooth, and sure enough, that looks like a closed landfill. It is a closed landfill. So we wanted to make sure it didn't look like a closed landfill. And here we actually teamed up with the Walden Woods Project, who contributed $134,000, and we developed a plan where it looked more like a rolling meadow. It had a knoll on the top. We had a tree planting plan, and we sprinkled the site with warm seasonal grasses rather than the typical landfill cover, which is clover. We used our own wood chips and our own compost to supplement the soil so that we, Thoreau's concept of going back to the earth, we actually practiced using the compost, using the wood chips to lower the cost, to enrich the soil. Those native grasses took two seasons to mature. They are very, very, very hard to do, but you look today and they're deer, they're fisher cats, they're coyotes, there are hawks flying about, there's a killdeers, it has been returned to an outdoor passive recreation site of, I think it's very, very, very attractive. And at the same time, we've got the 35 acres, about 4 acres that we utilize for composting earth products, and we dump our snow there in the wintertime, snow and ice, primarily from our commercial areas to keep them safe.
And that's not a small use.
Not at all. And part of the controversy is the desire of some to have the entire site naturalized. The trade-off there is, first of all, where could you put the composting and snow and ice operation that is convenient and does not interfere with neighbors and residential use. That's also very convenient to the commercial area. And that's quite a big challenge. A lot of people have looked around and not found the site. The nice thing we have is we're in a bowl at the landfill. If you drive by on 126 or Route 2, you don't even see us. We're only there on weekends primarily, and in the wintertime whenever we have to move snow around, so that we're it's very benign use. We have wonderful drainage, so there's no pollution, whether it's noise or stormwater, and the critters are back. So this is a challenge. We talk about the future. We want to make sure that I'd love to see the continued shared use, responsible shared use of our earth products and passive recreation.
Is Walton Woods giving you pressure?
Yes. When I talk to their leadership, when I read their literature, that's one of their goals. They're not shy saying it is. The Selectman Study Committee felt that ideally if everything else could be met, they'd like to see the area restored. The real question is of all the other goals and objectives like recycling and winter maintenance can be met, and that's a big if. So yes, we have there's a tension there.
The trailer park is no longer used, right, next to it?
That's correct. Part of the Walden Pond State Reservation was to improve its site, and part of that was to expand, I think, its parking facilities, and next door to that was one of our original affordable housing developments in a trailer park. So over time, people have moved out, and I believe now the last person has gone. And so part of their master plan is to redevelop that into either parking, further maintenance, which is fine with us.
Now let's move to road maintenance.
Sure. I remember coming to Concord, and I was driving around getting prepared for the first interview, and I was nervous as heck, so I drove Concord streets, and some of Concord streets were earth-shattering, or at least nerve-shattering. Hawthorne Lane was a mess. Old Road, a 9-acre corner, looked like it was on the original asphalt. We had literally country byways and lanes that were just had not been kept up. And the problem with that is that you pay for that. If you don't maintain your roads, then when you have to get there to fix them, the cost of the fix is far more than if you maintain it. It's like if you replace your roof timely, then you're paying for primarily for the shingles and the labor. If you wait so long and there's structural damage, or the insulation is wet and destroyed, or animals and critters can get in there, then you have a much, much bigger challenge and expense. So coming to Concord, the challenge was to take that premise and to put it to work in a business-like way. And the town, the finance committee, the town manager, and town meeting, the Board of Selectmen, the Public Works Commission, all have been united that, one, that the town needs to invest annually the necessary funds to restore the roads and to then maintain the roads. And two, our CPW team led by, it's our roads and sidewalks teams that's led by the Public Works engineer, the town engineer, the highway superintendent, the highway supervisor, and myself, aided by a pavement management software, have developed a 20-year plan. That software gave us the big answer: how much money, on average, every year do you need to invest cost-effectively to bring your roads up to standard and to maintain them? And the answer was $1 million. And that's not $1 million now and $2 million 10 years from now. That's $1 million now and maybe slightly grow with some inflation. We've been able to do that in 9 years thanks to the generosity of the town's taxpayers and state road funding. And the roads now are, by our measurement of a pavement condition index, are now where they should be on average. And I'm pleased to say our sidewalks, which deserve equal treatment, you have a right to walk safely down the sidewalk as much as you have a right to drive safely down the street. The sidewalks now, for the first time, are of up to standard on average. Chris Whalen, again, the finance director and our capital improvement budget plan have been huge in supporting the necessary funding for our roads and our sidewalks. Without that leadership and support, we could have done the best we could, but we couldn't achieve those dramatic gains that we've achieved.
You seem to be doing work on the Kais Road parking lot now.
Yes. Our strategy is whenever we develop three-year roads and sidewalk plans, when we're ever looking at a section of road or sidewalk, or primarily the road, we look at opportunities to improve other things. It's coordinated, for instance, with our water, sewer, and the municipal light plant. Do they need to work on their pipes or the wires underground? If so, we need to give them time to get there before we get there with the roads. If the road needs work, what about drainage? What about sidewalks? What about signs? What about handicap access curves? Well, for Kais Road that needs work, it was clear that there wasn't adequate pedestrian access parallel with the road crossing the large Kais Road parking lot. There also wasn't adequate safe pedestrian access from 100 Kais Road, the Mill Dam, to the Chamberlain Park. There also were drainage deficiencies, and it looked like an asphalt wasteland. So with the help of the engineering team, Jim Shuris, John Woodsmall, and this is John's baby, Sean Dyvall, public works engineer in charge of stormwater, we've come up with a design that provides new sidewalks, a very large planting area that will be green and will enforce with some trees. We've done the drainage. We'll be doing drainage improvements as well. So without a loss of parking spaces, and that was a real challenge because every single space is important. That construction's underway, which is the summer of 2006, and it should be substantially completed this construction year. The tree planting will probably wait until the spring of 2007.
And lighting will accompany it?
We have. That was Chris's idea of at some point in the future have lighting or decorative lighting to help light the parking lot in the entranceway to the back to the Chamberlain Park. So we have put the underground wiring in and the junction boxes for that as a future phase. But the philosophy, we're improving 6 to 10 miles of road a year. So when you're thinking about we're also improving the water, the sewer, the drainage, the street signs, we paint the fire hydrants or replace them, and the sidewalks. Over time, you can kind of picture in your own mind how the community assets are being protected and restored.
You sometimes get into people who, want to create a vision that does not necessarily bear with reality. And they may look at a road, for example, like Virginia Road, and say, oh, this is rural and country, but at the same time, you have it partially zoned limited industrial park, and
yes,
some of the major employers, like Welch's and Sybase, are on that road. And that is the whole scenic road designation, and how that relates to reality and good road maintenance.
Yes, there's a. I certainly felt when I got here that there was a real tension between the community and how they viewed road design, and the department's views and how they felt roads should be designed. We weren't the first to understand, and now that one of the key terms in transportation road engineering is this context-sensitive design, that you design your transportation network to fit the context of where it is. Virginia Road is a good example. That was done just before I got here, where you had a very narrow way, and you had commercial on one end, and you had houses on the other end. That's a very, very large challenge, and I think they did probably the best they could do. That there was, it was very hard to be able to widen it, but they did provide drainage, curbing, and sidewalks to and improve the road surface itself, so that you could get in and out of there safely, whether you're on foot or by car. Our philosophy is a footprints design concept that Concord is tree-lined, it's windy roads, frequently the roads are narrow, we've got environmental assets all over the place, so it's not appropriate to widen and straighten. We also have a public shade tree inventory, which is CPW's responsibility to protect, enhance, and nourish. So the challenge there is to design a road that still allows safe passage, but protects the environment and the neighborhood feel, the streets. West Concord, the Main Street project, I won't go into great detail, was one where our initial design, the neighborhood felt was too wide, and we came up with a design that we felt wasn't, based on some very good feedback. The problem there is we couldn't get the state to agree to grant a waiver so we could get state funding for that design. And so we ended up implementing our own footprint design with slope granite curbing, sidewalks, drainage, protected all but three of the trees, teamed up with the neighborhoods on plantings alongside of that road. It's a gorgeous road, and this is between Pine and Church Street in West Concord to the Damon Mill. And the frustrating thing there was the state standards were not standards that were appropriate for Concord, and therefore we were frozen out of state funding.
I think $90,000.
Over $1 million.
Oh, okay.
Over $1 million there. The good news is that CPW leadership has played a role in a five-year effort to reform the state guidelines and the new project development and design guidebook, as they call it, has incorporated just about every context-sensitive design and philosophy we have here in Concord, and now that guidebook is the Bible for the state's transportation department, and it happens to be a model for the country. So, and we're hoping to utilize that consensus in highway design to get state funding for this second phase of the Main Street project, which would go from basically Damon Mill west to the Acton Town Line.
Hmm. Everything you do is problem solving and the challenges. And I think the train whistle challenge this year was one that you very successfully dealt with through the engineering department.
Well, we're fortunate to have Jim Shuras as town engineer. He joined us in 2004. Jim formerly was Public Works Commissioner in the city of Fitchburg. The selectmen were given a very hard challenge. The Federal Railroad Administration had basically had an edict that if you didn't protect or provide adequate protection for your railroad crossings, that train whistles would blow. Concord had been spared of this noise and noise pollution for several decades. And the challenge was, well, how are you going to do that? We were given basically a year to do it. A team of, with the selectmen's leadership, Chris Whalen and Jim Shuras, and with vetting through several community meetings, came up with a low-cost plan to renovate two of the crossings, and those renovations would meet federal train whistle standards. And we were able to do that and meet the deadline for June of this year. And those improvements are in place, and the trains are still silent. The basis of a strong organization is talented people. I mentioned Jim Shuras, town engineer, the roads team leader, and John Woodsmall, the stormwater, Sean Dyvall. I've mentioned Alan Cathcart, water and sewer, who's a star in the field. His team, Elena Poekas Ellis, who's the ops engineer, Joanna Vecetta, the conservation coordinator, Ann Dorfman, Dick Fowler, and in Highway and Grounds, and the people that do the actual work around here, and I've been talking about the upper management team, the Todd Manchusis, Tom Ford, Peter Flynn, and John Wilson, who are the supervisors of our work crews, are extremely talented, and our work crews are really care and committed for what they're doing. And one of my messages I like to convey through this history is the importance of having good people, to treat them well, to give them good leadership, good safe equipment, and direction, and guidance. And they can do remarkable, remarkable things. And those are the people that have made all the difference in the world.
Now, the actual, since we're documenting the wreckage, the actual solution that Jim Shuras and the team came up with was?
Yes, it was to put the problem we had where the gates came down for one lane, and you could go around the gate, even though the whistle, the lights were clanging, the lights were blinking, and the gate was clanging. So they had to put in barriers down the middle of the road on either side of the tracks, so that you had to stay on the right-hand side, waiting for the train. And then secondly, to extend the protection for pedestrians. So we had arms installed so the pedestrians would wait as well, or people on bicycle. So it was having those traffic islands in the middle to keep the vehicles in queue, and then additional protection for pedestrians. We also improved the signage and the pavement markings to let people be alert that there was a train stopped there. But that was at the cost of, I think our estimated total cost was around $60,000. The alternative of having these enormous quadrant gates were in the millions. It was over $1 million per location. So we saved hundreds of thousands of dollars, did it on schedule. And that's, again, a credit to Jim, who's now a train horn whistle design expert, among other things.
By necessity. Program was extended this year, and a lot of work had taken place in both ends of town.
Yes, one of the public works, if it's going to succeed, has to have plans. And one of the things we've been able to do in a collaborative way is to develop master plans for all our major asset areas. We've talked about roads already. We have one for sidewalks. We have a water plan. We talked somewhat about how we achieved some of our water objectives. Sewer or wastewater is the same thing. And the town has its own wastewater treatment plant. It's a 1.2 million gallon a day facility off Bedford Street. When the average use exceeded 80% of capacity, as defined in our state and federal permit, we were required to do a 20-year wastewater plan. We were planning to do that anyway, and we initiated a planning process. What you referred to was the results of that planning process, what we call as phase one, to extend sewers to two neighborhoods. the planning process wasn't easy. It took there was a the town manager appointed a wastewater planning committee of eight talented and very hardy souls, because it took us over 5 years. We ended up having over 60 meetings or community meetings or committee meetings. 5 different consultant teams to develop this 20-year plan. And that plan basically said that Concord still shall remain primarily served for its wastewater needs on-site, that it's preferable to treat water wherever you can, the wastewater on-site, rather than having it go by pipe to the treatment plant, into the Concord River, and eventually out to the ocean. And we should have an on-site management program, and that's one thing we developed as part of this plan that's administered through the Board of Health to help people understand how they can take care of their septic systems, how to maintain them, developed a grant program where they can get financial assistance, and then identified exactly what neighborhoods needed by very careful analysis off-site or sewers. And that's approximately 750 parcels. The plan divided into 4 different phases spread out over at least 10 years to be served either through sewers or package treatment systems. Town meeting in the spring of 2004 appropriated $4.8 million for the first phase, which includes serving West Concord around the Prairie West Street area, for serving about 89 homes. And what we've just finished now are finishing up the Elmbrook neighborhood of approximately 215 homes. West Concord sewering is completed, and those people are being served that want to connect. This fall of 2006, the Elmbrook neighborhood will be, they can start connecting. And we have some, as you know, very high groundwater issues there. So we're helping homeowners with groundwater. We're also helping to protect the environment. We're only doing it where it's necessary. We were able to get a 2% state revolving fund loan so that the costs are remarkably low, given the cost of capital. And so that's worked very well together. The longer term challenge will be that we still have a cap on our wastewater treatment requirements at the wastewater treatment plant, and we've got the community's continuing to grow, so it's very possible that we're going to have to relook at our wastewater assumptions and calibrate it some more over the coming years. Talking about wastewater, we've also, with the plan, we were able to determine what the flows were going to be, and we've initiated a $15 million almost total rehabilitation of the wastewater treatment plant. That construction is underway, be starting this month of August 2006, take approximately 18 months. At the end of that, we'll have pretty much of a new plant with meeting higher effluent standards. Part of that is a innovative phosphorus removal system that we helped test in Concord. And as a result of this partnership, the sales of that technology to other communities or countries, Concord actually will be getting a shared revenue from that, up to approximately $3 million. So that's a substantial project that we feel very good about. That's underway, and that return on our investment with the sale of that technology will also help pay for it.
Now, you mentioned a cap on the capacity.
Yes, it's not. There's two sorts of ways of looking at capacity. One is the engineering capacity of how much by strength or by flow this facility can treat. And the second one is the capacity that limits that are set by the state and federal regulation. And it's that second cap that that is the controlling feature here. And state and federal regulators do not believe it's in the environmental interest or the public interest to continue to increase flows into, in this case, the Concord River, even though we're treating the effluent at a higher and higher level all the time. So we have to work within that cap. At the same time, we have other state mandates having to do with affordable housing, for instance, economic growth, smart growth. So those things have to still be sorted out so we can meet our regulatory responsibilities as well as meet the town of Concord's needs.
Okay. Let's move to cemetery care, and there you get into the history of the town.
Oh, absolutely. Concord's blessed, as you know, by having historic cemeteries. These, particularly Sleepy Hollow, is a major tourist draw. We're blessed by having people like Tish Hopkins, who's our cemetery specialist, who's take care of these sacred grounds. The cemeteries and the stones and grave markers in them are constitute our outdoor museum. And the challenge here when I got here was not the day-to-day maintenance. Tish and her very small crew continue to do a very, very good job of that. It's the question of how to actually preserve and document the preservation of the grave markers, and we were lucky, fortunate to get a intern the summer of 1999, Alicia Parisi, and she developed a grave marker preservation and management plan, which we adopted in 1999. And from that, we did, and that plan included documentation of every grave marker in our two oldest cemeteries, Old Hill Burying Ground, next to St. Bernard's Church, and South Burying Ground, the corner of Main Street and Kai's Road. Total documentation in photography and mapping of every single grave marker. From that report, we hired a firm to do an environmental assessment of Old Hill Burying Ground, and the big conclusion of that report was we needed to remove some trees to stabilize the slope so that we can go to the grave markers. We've done that. We've removed the trees, and if you look at the history of Old Hill Burying Ground and the old pictures, a lot of them had no trees on them. The original drawings were, so we preserved those trees that needed to be preserved, got rid of a lot of scrub trees as well. The slopes have been stabilized, and the preservation effort is underway. The preservation team, which are Concordians, Minxie and Jim Fannin, and I don't have the name of their firm, have been working each summer for the past 6 years preserving grave markers. And because we hadn't completed the slope stabilization, they started with South Burying Ground, and they preserved over 70 grave markers. We celebrated the completion of that effort in a celebration this past May 6th, I believe, 2006, and celebrated and recognized the Fannins and Alicia for their efforts. We now have a plan to preserve as well as maintain our cemeteries. Last year, we were honored that the selectmen voted to have the Melvin Memorial Protection Committee step down and transfer the responsibility of that most beautiful sculpture returned under the responsibilities of the CPW. And we have a preservation protection plan to take care of that as well. I was, just when I got here, we finished up the development and the creation of the town's first new cemetery since 1855, and that was the Knoll at Sleepy Hollow. It used to be an asparagus field, approximately 10 acres, of a very nice site now that we're maintaining, and it's allowing Concordians again to be buried in town. There had been a moratorium, actually, because Sleepy Hollow had run out of space. We to expand the use of Sleepy Hollow, we eliminated some unnecessary roads, literally turned asphalt into green space that generated $400,000 of revenue for new burial spaces there as well. Most recently, Sophia and Una Hawthorne, the wife and daughter of Nathaniel Hawthorne that were interred in England, were returned to Concord and Sleepy Hollow, and now rest next to their husband and father. And that was very exciting. And that just happened this past June.
Yeah, June 26th. No, very nice. You were talking about the expansion of the cemetery with the new Knoll area. It was not only expanding it, but you created a new section.
Yes. There hadn't been a dedicated section for interments of people of Jewish faith, and that was requested of the cemetery committee. Concord Public Works, through its highway ground superintendent, it was Dave Tarosi for most of the years I've been here, and now it's Dick Fowler, working with talented citizens on the committee, listened very carefully and created that area in the Knoll, and that was long overdue. It speaks to what makes Concord work so well, is talented, interested, passionate citizens having a point of view, articulating that point of view, not being afraid to do so, and then having on the other end a department and committees like the Public Works Commission or the Cemetery Committee that know how to listen. And as long as we're in sync, amazing things can happen. And why Concord does so much is that team of talented citizens with professional staff working very well together, not being afraid of each other or disengaged. And that partnership, I think, really reflects and is really the foundation of just about everything we've done here in Concord.
Now, Tuesday, we're going to have a session here on another project that you're doing with the cemetery.
Yes, Marion Wheeler is an expert of Concord cemeteries and a historian that wrote certainly one of the key guides to the history of Concord's burying grounds. And through Phoebe Hamm, a local resident and activist, we've invited Marion and the general public and the public works crews to come and talk about the powder house, which is a brick structure, very small brick structure, maybe 6x6, 8x8, that sits on the top of Old Hill Burying Ground. And it goes back to the 1800s, and it was actually used to store gunpowder to protect the town from whatever enemies it had at that time. And so it's not, it's in the middle of a cemetery, a burying ground, because it was a town-owned and it was elevated. And it's in need of repair. So it made all the sense in the world to bring together the local historian that has the knowledge of the building and its history, as well as the history of the grounds, with the general interested general public and the staff to understand the fascinating historical features of that structure.
So when you're looking at the Old Hill of Burying Ground, let's say from Lexington Road.
Yes.
It's on the right?
Yes, that's correct. You would never know it, that it was a powder house. And So I encourage everybody to go out there and find it, because it will be there for you.
That was a lovely invitation you
Phoebe helped wrote that, and Anna Lepowski, who's our administrative assistant, helped with the graphics. We actually got the photo. Phoebe got the photo from Concord Public Library and Leslie Wilson. If you look at this photo, you can see, if you look very carefully, see the powder house on the hill. But if you don't know what you're looking for, you'd never find it.
We'll end this conversation with something right here on your own campus that we've taken a walk to several times, that you've been proud of, and you've converted an area that had been unused to the lovely Riverfront Park.
Yes. It was somewhat, just wasn't right that the public works site here on Kai's Road was in disrepair. The buildings were in disrepair. We hadn't done a very good job of protecting the shore of the river and the back of the river or the wetlands beside our campus. And Chris, one of the first things he asked me to do is to develop a plan to bring this place back. Out back, what was now what we call Riverfront Park, that's borders the Sudbury River and a setback of about 150 feet, was tarmac. And in the wintertime, Public Works had pushed the snow from the commercial areas right into the river. They finally had been stopped doing that, and Monahan, the Natural Resources administrator, had actually had a telephone pole erected with a birdhouse on top, and that telephone pole said, you can pile the snow no higher, no closer. The fact of the matter is the snow shouldn't have been there in the first place. So one of the first things we did is end that process. That was the creation of the snow storage area at the landfill. We did the closest thing to design, build, and design renovations to this site, as well as the landscaping. And we've got funding to do that. We're proud to say that the renovations of the site cost the neighborhood of $2.5 million. Bedford just has a brand new public works facility that cost over $6 million. So we got it at less than half the price. We had work crews, our own crews, out picking up the debris from the side yards and backyards, dump trucks full of beer cans and everything else imaginable that had been cluttered here over the years. And that's all protected area now. The park is used for staff picnics, for residents can come with their canoes and beach and sit down. The critters are back, deer, hawks, it just looks quite nice, and we're proud to be here and to take care of a lovely place.
Well, it's certainly very lovely, and so we're saying goodbye to you September 1st.
Yes, it's been quite a ride for 9 years, and I've felt very privileged being here. To serve Concord. One thing about Concord, it's a very welcoming place, and I felt from the day I arrived that there was appreciation as well as interest. I think that CPW thrived with the high standards, the care this community has for itself. Part of our challenge was to make sure CPW was in sync with community values. I think we've done that, to build trust and confidence. And I think we've tried to do that as well. The basis of that is to have a vision. And I'm talking about both kind of strategic and the thematic vision, so people understand where we're trying to go. Sound plans, and we're talking about, we've invested over $10 million in our sewer plant, another $10 million in a water plant. Our roads have been $1 million a year. So those things, you have to have a plan. Financial management, the enterprise funds, we need to know where we're going so we can raise the necessary funds to get the job done, to take advantage of the opportunities. I think we've done that pretty well. And I think finally is the whole thing about building a team with pride and talent that's in sync with the community and really passionate about Concord. And so there's a lot of satisfaction here that we've done a lot together.
Well, we'll miss you, and the very best of luck.